Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on now, whoa, 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 whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Margot Voorhees-Thompson. Her show, Letters from a Remote Landscape, is on now at Russo Lee Gallery through April 27th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Margot.
It's a pleasure, and I appreciate being asked. I like to talk about my work because people often have questions.
You did Art Focus back in the day with Julie Bernard, correct?
I did. And she was just great. And we had some funny calls coming in, and she was very amusing. And so it was kind of a wandery interview, but it was really, she really got to the heart of what I was doing at the time.
Mm-hmm. For people who don't know you, you've been around a long time in Portland.
Yes.
But all this work in this show is based in southeastern Oregon.
Correct.
So a little town called Plush, which is just east of Lakeview. So Google that and you'll see Plush is tiny, 22 people.
I don't know exactly how many people live there, but the important thing is I know some people there who gave me a place to stay when I went out, and I've been going out there for years and years. My first trip to Plush, where I took photographs and did drawings, was in 1983. And since then, I've gone back almost every year, except during the pandemic, I did not go. And it's a magnetic place. It's it has hypnotic beauty. It's a power place. It's a place where human beings have been roaming around making a living in that landscape for thousands and thousands of years. So I'm attracted to places that have a human connection, but also the stark beauty, the powerful landforms, the geography, the Abert Rim, the northern edge of the Great Basin. This is the location for this work. And it's very compelling, especially when you see that the petroglyphs that are on many of the rocks in various, you know, hidden locations, they describe in a very concrete way what they were interested in, things such as antelope and shamans and astronomy and the sun and just endless numbers of things that maybe haven't been interpreted properly, but will one day get more and more interesting as they get more and more dating. Because when I first went out there, they thought the lichens were about 3,000 years old. And then not too long after that, it was like 5,000 to 7,000 years old. And then last spring in Riley, Oregon, on the Abert Rim, was found an agate scraper beneath the crust of a Mazama volcanic eruption. And that was dated at approximately 23,000 years old. So it's not exactly a new place for people to go. Mm-hmm. It's just that right now, because there are no longer Native Americans working the nomadic peoples working the place, we don't know what that history was so long ago. We don't know what caused them exactly to leave, but they worked that area over and over, and they were probably there part of the year. But these people intrigue me because I'm interested in graphic symbols and calligraphy and invented alphabets and the ways in which people survive to create signs, symbols, and language that help them survive. So my imagination engages with this landscape in a very big way, not only for its beauty that I want to recognize and abstractly deal with, but also because it is a place of human intervention to survive. And so a lot of this show is about the idea of survival. But also, lichens are plentiful out there, and they're they're hundreds of years old, some of them, and they grow in colonies, and they too are survivors of the desert and the desiccation of this land. Mm-hmm. And that's what motivates me for the color choices for the show.
As you come in the main back room at Russo Lee, on the left on the big wall, there's a long paper scroll. It must be 4-5 feet wide. And how long?
It's 42 inches by 18 and a half feet.
Okay, it's very big. It's a sort of beigey colored paper. And then you've kind of attacked it with these black charcoal marks?
Charcoal. Yes, the charcoal was found in the desert.
Okay, slashes, zigzags, scribbles. And then on top of that, you've laid a sort of orangey-red paint marks with a brush, so they're kind of rectangles, but at the bottom, you've done a lot of splashes, kind of Ralph Steadman crazy, you know, like blood splatter. Now, is this a landscape or is this an abstract painting?
I consider it called the Phoenix because to me it's very gestural and it indicates struggle and survival. And the sort of history of the myth of Phoenix is what got me to do this piece out there in the desert on a very hot day. And it was quite a phenomenal thing for me to experience, to be able to make this work out in the desert and to show again this underlying theme of survival and everything about this show, from people to lichens to the places. And the current day people who live out there are absolutely wonderful and they are very hardworking and they're like embodying the idea of the Phoenix surviving and going on, and that Phoenix lives for 500 years and then burns and builds a nest to burn himself up and then start over again. So it's a symbol of, a powerful symbol of regeneration and recycling and you know, some people don't want to claim resurrection. I have no idea about that, but what appeals to me is the strength of it.
It looks like two pointy mountains, a mountain range, the left side, and then maybe we're looking over a valley with sort of rolling hills in the background, but the red seems to outline the bigger mountains. But then what is this big broad stripe in the middle, and what are the splashes? What were you feeling when you did that?
Okay, it is very possible, listening to you, it's very possible for me to see someone interpreting it as a landscape, and I think that's kind of a cool underlying theme, because I also do a lot of landscape. But really, I started on the left side of this scroll and worked that way and to the right. And the majority of the splashings are sort of in the bottom part, but to me, that's symbolic of the Phoenix trying to rise above to you know, get back to life again after burning out. And so the charcoal, of course, is a product of fire. Phoenix is usually pictured as a vermilion eagle-like bird with orange feathers and fire. So vermilion, too, is a very sacred color and is symbolic of eternal life and many other things. So that was a conscious choice of mine to use that vermilion. As a calligrapher, I learned a long time ago from studying Chinese paintings, calligraphic paintings, that the chop is usually in vermilion, which is not water soluble. So that there's a tradition in Asian painting, at least in Chinese landscape scrolls, to have a lot of information with the chop, and the person who carves the chop is almost as important as the calligrapher, if not more.
Sorry, what's the chop?
The chop is the artist's individual graphic symbol with letters, characters carved in it, and then it might have other little notations around it. It just depends. But anyway, I actually decided to upend the very tasteful small chop idea and make the big phoenix be that brilliant vermilion that a chop is, which symbolizes eternal life anyway. So, and several people have commented about the idea of blood. And, you know, that would be appropriate to see the blood and the struggle in this.
Mm-hmm. So you took this roll and your paint and you picked up charcoal and you just went out and stood on the dirt?
On the dirt,
for
yeah.
a day or longer?
I couldn't have actually probably painted for an entire day, but I did go out there with a film crew. They were making a documentary about my work, and we went out in June the first time and September the following year. And in September, which last September, I did this piece. And so it was filmed, and we did it on the ground, and it was actually quite interesting because then I could just walk around and get the charcoal and find it in the desert, and then the dirt is just handfuls of dirt that I added into this, and then I had a spritz bottle, and sometimes I'd, you know, make it the lines a little fuzzy, and then I had a large bottle of Chinese vermilion ink. And worked layers a little bit, but not so much as to make it not have a lot of air in it. I wanted it to be this kind of sensation of wings trying to rise off the ground, you know, and that you would see the distance in beneath the wings.
Mm-hmm. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Margot Voorhees-Thompson. She is talking about her show Letters from a Remote Landscape, which is on now at Russo Lee Gallery through April 27th. There are four framed pieces now. They're gouache and canvas. They look very different. There's a lot of sort of palette knife work. And, you know, these are, look like landscapes, right? These are mountains. What's the connection between this wild scroll and then these sort of framed, more carefully done?
Well, I think every artist wants to throw a curveball now and then, and I would love to work on more big projects like that. But as you can see, it would cost a fortune to frame such a piece, and it's hard for the galleries. They had to, you know, put it up with magnets and things. But I'll move from the Phoenix piece, which I hope you can get in to see before it comes down, and then go straight to this piece here.
This is called Warner Valley Near Plush. So you're in Plush. You went out with your gear. And
I did it on the ground. Same idea.
Paper.
And so I was using. I had the same, pretty much the same palette minus the. This has yellow, and that was not there. But there are a lot of yellow grasses. There were at the end of summer. The grasses were kind of golden, and the ground had, you know, that kind of look. With brown and black and then charcoal again found in the desert, and then the vermilion. And the vermilion I put in because I saw red, orange, vermilion colored lichens on top of growing encrusted on rocks. And so it'd be up close and you'd see a giant rock. So this is a very abstract version of what I was seeing. And then let's go to the right. And this piece is called
Canyon Lichens.
Canyon Wall. And
Canyon Lichens Temple Doorway.
Temple Doorway, sorry. so the idea about this is that I wanted to take a look at lichen colonies growing together on the same rock. And these vivid colors are just so extraordinary. And they do actually occur in these color combinations because I did color studies while I was out there in my sketchbooks. And then I there was this sort of bluish lichen that was growing in a very tiny amount. And so I thought I'd put it in there. And then when I did, I realized it reminded me of a temple doorway.
So this is a rectangular canvas, a red background, but mostly it's yellow, sort of mustard yellow, and then orange, the red peeping through, a sort of greeny yellow on the right. These are dabs and scrapes, kind of squares.
I do all my mixing on the canvas, so every time I put a color in, I scrape over it and then pull a new color in, let it dry, and then come back, and I keep working the surface until I get the kind of color vibration I want and how it commemorates the actual life of the lichens.
Tell us about these lichen, because when you were talking earlier, you were talking about them being thousands of years old. Is that possible?
Well, no, the lichens, I don't know if they're thousands or if they're just hundreds of years old, but I posted a picture of a rock that a gentleman said that rock, those lichens were probably at least 300 or 400 years old because they, you know, the scale of them. And that was a rock I had photographed in 1983 when I went to Plush with my son. Then, you know, I found the rock again many years later in like 2011 or 2015, something like that. And, you know, I took pictures of it and it's this exact same rock. And the lichens have just spread a little bit more, but they're, you know, decades worth of growth. And but what is thousands of years old are the petroglyphs that are the remains of what has been left behind by a culture that had been there thousands of years ago, living semi-nomadically, and then probably moving along because they had antelope that they were hunting, and those are depicted in the glyphics.
So, I mean, I think of the eastern Oregon or southeastern as a brown landscape, and you go there and you see these bright yellow and reds and greens.
Well, I see these are things that I see at different critical times of day. For instance, that piece over there, which has calligraphic lettering in it, you know, the idea of this piece is that this is a text that I've invented to symbolize the fact that there is writing in the desert. There's writing not hieroglyphics, but of petroglyphs, which are symbols which connote things to the people that made them.
So this is a orange vertical rectangle. It's called Desert Text Number One. And in the yellow and the orange verticals, there's a big red circle. And then on top of all that is black letters, triangles, sort of look like broken up numbers, equal signs, horoscope signs. And they seem to be streaming down like a waterfall. So when you made up these graphic items, what was in your head? What was your inspiration?
Well, I wanted to feel that I was inventing a language of survival and the way the humans who had been there long, long thousands of years before me had done to survive out there, because they had very complete systems of petroglyphs that included shamanistic signs and antelope and astronomy and stages of the sun and the moon and all sorts of things, healing stuff. And I think that you spend enough time gazing at these symbols in reality out there on the ground and you are in awe of what they were able to accomplish. I mean, if you think of how hard it must be to chip a design into a rock of that scale. It's pretty amazing to see that work and how meaningful it was to the people that made it.
What is the scale?
Well, some of the rocks are taller than I am. Some of them are loaf-shaped rocks on the ground, but they don't have the hieroglyphics on it that I've seen, or be a rock wall, a cliff wall. There are just all sorts of places where they crop up, and they're not necessarily well-marked or anything. You just have to spend time out there and learn to look, and I think people who live out there are very protective that these not be defaced, and so they don't generally advertise where they are. And some, there has been a little bit of defacement over the years, mm-hmm. and that's to me, that's a crime. But I want to say that the color of this, it not only is the lichen color, but it's also the color of the heat of the sun at sunset. And so this is sort of the text of the sun, because they worship the sun and out there, and they do to this day. And
which is better there, the sunset or the sunrise?
Oh, that's hard, because there are parts of that landscape that are very low and subtle, and there are drying up lakes and, you know, very low-lying water up against the edge of the mountain. And so some of places like the Rabbit Hills, which is a series of mountains, or maybe it's called the Rabbit Mountains, but anyway, that is more low-lying, and it's very sullen at sunset. It's extraordinary to watch the sun come up over that, because it's very subtle at first, and then it's like changes it to a kind of a dusty looking sort of not very exciting place, and yet it is totally exciting at certain times of the day. And then the sunsets are epic. I mean, you go drive up to the top of Heart Mountain, and that's spelled H-A-R-T. Go to the top of Heart Mountain, and you look out, and you see you think you've seen the best sunset you've ever seen, and then it keeps happening for a long, long time, and it's fantastic.
You have another piece which is very calligraphic. It's called yes. Context Number One, 2024. Okay, so you've just made this. It's orange, but it's a sort of screen of your made-up calligraphy.
Correct.
Very evenly spread.
This piece again is called Context Survival. So I have a belief, and I think a lot of people do, that the landscape that you live in, especially back long periods of time ago, shaped your language, shaped what you could do and what you could survive on. And that these graphic symbols and glyphs were things that they paid attention to. They took great care to make them, and they were saying things that would help them, you know, like point the way, find the antelope, different things that my imagination engages in when I am inventing symbols. I'm not trying to replicate what I saw. This is not like direct observation. This is in my mind, the kind of graphic things that people would develop in order to communicate and to create a language about who they are, where they are. And so I would just ask you to jump in with your imagination and understand that this is about context of innovation and survival.
Do you draw them out with pencil, then fill them in with black paint?
Well, not quite. I did not use a pen for this, because I have built up several layers of paper on this canvas after rabbit skin glue and gesso, and then I lay in these papers, and I have put that color in the background, that sort of ochre color, yellow ochre, golden ochre, is actually sealed into the paper that I applied after I had put that on the paper, and then it gets attached. Then I came along and used a brush, a very small brush, a number 5 Da Vinci, if you would like that information. And I outline each letter and then I fill it, because if I had used a pen, I might have had the occasional splat or drip and from a dip pen. I just did it by hand, like the way a sign painter would. Well, think about it. Those ancient peoples were sign painters when they made their petroglyphs. And they often use color, and there's not much of that left now, but occasionally you see it, and certainly the colors there in the desert and the rocks.
Do you have any advice for someone who's now going to head to Plush to have a look around?
Well, you might not be able to find a place to stay because there aren't a lot of people in Plush and there aren't a lot of possibilities, but I think there are a few places on Airbnb that you could get. I've not stayed in one because I was hosted by a family. And I think Lakeview is fairly close. Adel, I think, might have a few B&Bs.
Would someone just get their water bottle and walk for 12 hours?
Well, you better take more than one water bottle. Yeah, it's a really stunning landscape that's all-encompassing, and certainly you are very aware of the sun and the heat and the rocks and the dust and all the things that make it what it is.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Margot Voorhees-Thompson. She was talking about Letters from a Remote Landscape, which is on now at Russo Lee Gallery on Northwest 21st Avenue through April 27th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again, Margot.
Well, thank you very much. It's a treat to go through the cycle from Julia Bernard to... I didn't have an interview with Ava, but I know her, and now I've met you, and I hope the audience enjoys what we talked about. And best of all, I'd just love to see you walk in this gallery and take a look for yourself and see what you think. Andy, whoa, whoa, whoa.